Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to talk about something that I haven't talked about before, and that is the nature of banking, and specifically the nature of our economy and why our economy is like it is. And this will hopefully explain to you why, if you are Generation Z and living in the UK or living in America, why it is that it's very hard for you to afford a home. And it will make sense of something. It will initiate you into a secret. A lot of people think that the reason we have inflation is because of central banks. I want you to understand by the end of this, this is not the case. We have inflation because of private banks. And the private banks are so important that they are too big to fail, and therefore central government has to intervene to stop that from happening. Before I explain to you exactly how our economic system works, and I cannot emphasize enough that I'm relatively new to understanding it myself, and it's crazy. It's absolutely insane. It's a system built on sand. It's monstrously stupid. Before I do that, would you please subscribe? Subscribe here and subscribe over on my Substack, thejollyheretic.com, where you can find all of the most based content that I can't possibly put on YouTube, including in-person blogs, interviews, and all kinds of interesting stuff. And where, if you like what I do, you can support me for as little as the cost of a pint of beer a month. Right, back to the video. So how does this whole ludicrous system that we have, this ludicrous system, fiat currency, work? So absolutely down to basics. In the most basic economy, we barter. I have something you want, you have something I want, we exchange the two. This creates a very simple economy because it means that I have to have that thing that you want, the exact thing that you want, and you have to have the exact thing that I want. So a solution to that problem is to come up with something that we all want, which can be bartered for whatever it happens to be. Now, what that is precious metals, such as gold and silver. These are highly desirable because they are useful. People can make useful things out of them. And also, there's a degree to which we simply like them. We like them. They look nice. So therefore, money becomes something based around gold and silver. Now, the next step up from that is to create something called credit. Credit is a promise to pay. So I do not have enough gold to pay you for whatever it is I want now, for my five cows or whatever it is. But I write you a promise to pay, and I say I will pay you in the future for these cows. And that promise to pay is good enough for you, as long as you trust that I will pay you back in the future. And you may also say to me, well, there's a risk there involved, so I want to be sure that I will get my money in the future. And you will say, well, look, if I don't pay you back, then you can take my property. And if I do pay you back, then because of that risk you've had to take, you can charge interest. So I will pay you the price of whatever it is of these cows, plus a little bit extra. Now, from this, we have credit. Now, once we have credit, then we have more resources than we previously had, even though what we really have is a debt. We have a debt to the person who is our creditor. We are now in debt to that person. But that debt can be spent because we now have more resources than we previously had. So then we spend that money in the real economy. Now, our spending of this debt is another person's salary. So that person has more money. And then that person who has now essentially bought our debt, he has more money. So he spends, and so on. And so we have a system of economic growth. Now, without credit, without this system, we can only increase our resources if we increase our productivity, either by working harder or by innovating more. So there is a sort of there will be a straight line of growth. But it would be relatively slow because we can only increase our resources, we can only increase our spending by working harder, and presumably there's a maximum degree to which we can work, or by coming up with innovations, which relies on our intelligence and our brilliance and so forth. So, but with credit, we can do something interesting. With credit, for example, a farmer who cannot afford a tractor can get the credit to afford a tractor can grow way, way more and harvest way, way more than he previously would have been able to do, can then pay back the debt, the credit on that tractor, and suddenly he's richer, much richer than he would have been if he hadn't been able to get the credit to buy that tractor. Suddenly he's got a much more productive farm. He's got more money. He can spend more money. And this remember, one man's money is another man's salary, and then that person can spend more money, and so forth. And so we can see how this creates an economic boom where everyone has more because the farmer has managed to get more resources, more real things, more food or whatever it happens to be, out of the land. And he's done this via credit, and he wouldn't otherwise have been able to do so. The problem with credit is that it's human nature that people are greedy. So while some people will use credit to do something useful, which will actually make them money and, it's a useful thing for them, some people will just use it to get something they want, to get something they desire. A nicer chair or a nicer house or whatever it happens to be. Now, those people are not going to make any money out of what they are doing. And so really, they are borrowing from their future selves. And so at some point in the future, they are going to have to spend less because they're going to have than they would otherwise spend, because they're going to have to pay back their debt. Now, this means that if one man's salary is one man's spending is another man's salary, they will spend less. Then the person who would make money from them, that they would buy things from, will earn less. The person he will buy things from will earn less, and so forth. And so you have a cycle. You have a system where the spending goes up, and then the spending goes down. This is what we would call a short-term debt cycle. But gradually, of course, because you have these people, these innovative farmers who are using the credit to actually do something useful and to expand the degree to which they can extract resources and to therefore effectively grow the economy, although you're going to get these short-term cycles, they will go gradually up. As credit is used in a useful way to innovate more, to make things cheaper, to make life easier, and so forth, and to extract more resources and to be more productive. And so although there will be a short-term debt cycle, there will be a long-term movement upwards as the economy grows. So these are the short-term and long-term debt cycles. Now, eventually, though, for reasons we don't quite understand, the short-term debt cycle might last 5-7 years. The long-term debt cycle might last 80 years. And for reasons we don't quite understand, every 80 years or so, there is a collapse. Every 80 years or so, people just stop spending money and hoard, with the result that the economy massively, massively crashes. And this is what happened in about 1929 with the Wall Street crash, and this is what happened in about 2008. Now, we're not sure of the reasons for this. There are economic reasons I'll look at in a minute, but one possible reason is just a sort of cycle of hormones across time, which is useful for the organism that across time he will vary in the degree to which certain hormones are produced, and this will mean he will be unpredictable in terms of being a predator and in terms of predation. And so he will change slightly in size, he will change slightly in things like oxytocin, in testosterone or whatever, and eventually at a certain point in this cycle, which happens across a number of generations, he will feel more fearful and he will just stop spending money, with the result there is an economic collapse. But we don't, that's the long-term debt cycle. Now, of course, what that leads to is a massive shrinking of the economy, massive deflation, nobody spending anything, nobody having anything, and the result is political catastrophe and war. Now, remember again, moving back to the money more broadly, money is a promise to pay. It is a debt. So if you put money in the bank, what the bank does is it plays around with that money, it earns that money on the stock market, and it says, I will give you this money back. So the bank is in debt to you. The bank is taking your money and playing around with it. The bank is in debt to you. So your money is a debt. Now, if you take a loan from the bank, if you take money from the bank doesn't necessarily have that money. The bank will have it's taking a loan, which is a debt. The bank is saying you should be confident that we genuinely have this money, and we will definitely be able to pay you this money at some point in the future. but they don't actually have the money necessarily. So what they are creating in the loan is a debt. They are saying, okay, here is this debt, which is there's no real money. We're not giving you anything. We're not giving you a load of gold to go and buy your house. We are giving you a debt, which says we are creating a debt, which says which the person whose house it is will accept as payment for the house. So if you take a loan, what you are doing is you are taking the bank is creating a debt, which people have confidence in, and therefore the bank is essentially creating money. Because you can spend that money on real things. Now, everyone understands what counterfeit money does. Counterfeit money is a problem because counterfeit money pollutes the money resources and it causes deflation. It means there is more money about, so that those that have fairly earned their money are competing against those who haven't fairly earned their money, which means there are more people around with money, which means there are more people competing for the resources that are on sale, which means that people can afford to sell them for higher amounts, which means you have inflation. Well, this is exactly what we have here. The bank, in giving you this loan, which is actually a debt, which is actually them saying, okay, we promise that we have this money at some point should you need it, but until that time comes, here is our promise to pay. The bank is creating money, which can be used in the real economy. So it's a promise to pay. So what that means is that you now have a promise to pay, a debt, which you are spending, and other people are accepting your promise to pay with the assumption that in the future it will all be okay and the promise to pay will come through. Now, this promise to pay, of course, can be spent on real things. The result of that is there is more money in circulation. The result of that is that the value of the money in circulation is lessened. It is devalued. And this creates inflation because there is more money in the system. There are more people there with money, able to spend money. And therefore, there is more competition for resources. And therefore, people can put up the prices of their desired things because people will be able to pay more because there's more to pay more because there is more people with money. Now, too much inflation causes problems. It causes difficulties. It means that the prices are too high. It means that ordinary people cannot purchase the goods with which they desire. It means that the price of goods races ahead of the price of the value of fixed salaries. So something has to be done about too much inflation. So there is then a relationship between the private banks and the government, whereby the private banks are allowed to create money in this way, but the government will interfere to stop the economy overheating, to stop inflation becoming too high. And they will do this by raising interest rates, which is the amount they will charge the bank for them being able to create money and whatever. This means it with interest rates raised, the bank has to raise interest rates. This means that debts go up. This means that that people borrow less. This means there is less money around, and this means that prices go down. Now, this of course means with the prices lowered, that the interest rates can be raised, and then the process can continue all over again. With everything gone down, with interest rates low, people will borrow more, and then people will spend more, and then the process just continues all over again. And it is ensured that the inflation does not get too high. Now, in this context, the money is constantly being devalued. There is constant devaluation of the coinage. So it is not really in your interests to save. If you save in broadly, interest rates are low. And anyway, broadly, the money will not hold its value over time because there is this constant process of inflation. So it becomes in your interests to spend the money on something that holds its value over time. What we saw, really beginning from the 80s onwards, was a sort of one-off event where it was understood that housing holds its value over time. And so people start investing in housing. This creates a bubble where people have confidence that the cost of that the price of housing will go up, and they spend ever more on housing. And so housing, the prices of housing increases way beyond salaries, and increases way beyond how frequently houses are being built. And so the result is that gradually housing becomes more and more and more and more expensive, such that it becomes increasingly unaffordable to young people, which is a process we have seen across time, which has got worse and worse. Just a quick interruption. Please stop for a second and ask yourself this. Is there someone you could easily share this video with? Someone you know will agree because their moral values align with what I'm saying? Well, you should definitely go ahead and do so then. On the other hand, can you think of someone who would definitely not agree, who would just be angry that you would share such a nasty, racist, mean, evil video with them? Most likely you know both types of people, and the reason why these two people would react so differently to this video is because of their moral foundations. According to the moral foundation theory, conservative values rest on five dimensions, while liberals only have two. In other words, they can't relate to conservative or right-wing statements, they can't even understand them. The moral foundations theory was presented by Jonathan Haidt in his book The Righteous Mind. He showed that the moral conditions of politics are naturally evolutionary. This means that liberal attitudes also have an evolutionary benefit, even if we may find this difficult to imagine. If you want to get a very detailed summary of the main arguments from The Righteous Mind and understand what evolutionary function both conservative and liberal views have, you can do so at Liegeant.com. There you will find a short version of the most important core arguments from the book. In addition to The Righteous Mind, there are also shorts on many other base titles. You won't find most of them on other platforms. You can easily listen to titles in under 25 minutes. This means you can absorb knowledge of a whole book in under half an hour every day. So try it now. Go to Liegeant.com now and sign up with my promo code TJH to get 10% off.
Are you ready for the future of the West?